Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. Ted Ross controls. Carissa's at the phones. You know, some conversations we just need to have again and again because they're that important. And this will be one of those times, I think, today. Just looking at Ted at some statistics that said approximately 160,000 children a day stay home from school because they're afraid of being bullied. Mm-hmm. That's over 3 million students a month.
Wow.
That's pretty sobering.
Very high, yeah.
According to the Center for Disease Control, suicide is the third leading cause of death of young people between the ages of 10 and 24. And they're saying there's a 2.5 times teens who are bullied, 2.5 times more likely to attempt suicide.
And I wonder if those numbers are higher because of the digital element.
Yeah.
We'll have to find that out.
We'll find out today. We're going to talk bullying today. Bullying, talk prevention, maybe eradication. And we always love the opportunity to welcome back to our broadcast, Paul Coughlin. Paul is the founder and the president of the Protectors. He's an international speaker, teacher, and author of some 8 books, including No More Christian Nice Guy. He co-wrote a book with his wife called Married But Not Engaged, as well as his offering for parents, No More Jellyfish, Chickens, or Wimps, which you got to love the titles of the book and his great insights. And he's also written the Freedom from Bullying Parent and Teaching resource called Raising Bullyproof Kids. We've had him on before. The Protectors is a faith-based answer to the devastating problem of bullying on school campuses. And with that, let's jump into the program. Paul, welcome back. Good to have you on.
Hey, great to be with you. Thank you.
So as I was looking through some of those statistics, I mean, is there a link between bullying and suicide? That's pretty sobering. Is that where we're headed in this country?
Yeah, there is. There's a very sobering word now. It's called bullicide. And we have to be careful with it, though, because in many cases, it's not just bullying. In many cases, there's been a traumatic event in the family, maybe even a death, certainly something traumatic. And it's safe to say that if bullying is not the only factor in a kid taking their life, it certainly is a contributing factor. And we know from doing this work for the last 10 years is that it is often the straw that breaks that poor kid's back.
We hear the term, you know, a lot of us grew up with taunting and teasing and unkind words. Maybe we need to define, what are we talking about bullying? How is it different today than it was, you know, a couple of generations ago?
Yeah, you know, the word itself has been so used really for political utility. As you know, I write for Fox News headquarters in Manhattan on this topic, and was please take the word bullying off the sports page. We have now described everything that we don't like as bullying, and that's so sad because kids who are truly getting bullied are being overlooked by all these false definitions of bullying. Bullying is the superior use of power with the intention to harm another child multiple times and for no good reason. It is victimization without provocation. The kid doesn't deserve it. So it's not about conflict. It's not about misunderstanding. It's not about drama, which is a word that girls will use more than boys. It's really a campaign of concentrated cruelty against another kid and for reasons, you know, fill in the blank. They don't like the way the kid looks. The kid might be socially awkward. They don't like the shape of the kid's ear. They don't like how they walk. They just fill in the blank, or for whatever reason they feel justifies an ongoing attack of another kid.
And that word ongoing, that's a key part of this, isn't it?
It is. You know, I speak in a lot of schools. We do have a faith-based program, but we also work in public schools too, so we have a values-based program. Last year I was speaking during a parent night in an elementary school, and the poor principal, it's, you know, late in the year, she's exhausted, and she says to me, please, the only thing she said, please, would you tell the parents that if their child gets hit in the head with a jump rope once, that is not bullying. This is the kind of things that our educators are having to deal with, these false definitions of bullying. And why is this important? Because it's the difference between hurt and harm. You know, you're going to get your feelings hurt every once in a while, and it kind of grows us up. It matures us when we experience that kind of pain. Bullying is where the harm is. Bullying is where the psychological fragmentation takes place. Bullying is one of the reasons why that young lady in Texas City, for example, recently, 18-year-old girl, shot herself in front of her entire family. And she said she did it in part because she had been horribly bullied. So it's when they psychologically break in front of us, and the poor parents see it, grandparents see it, and they feel often very hopeless.
Well, you did mention, you know, the difference between hurt and harm, and it does, I guess, raise the question. We hear a lot about students, and they're probably maybe primarily college age, that get labeled as snowflakes. They're so tender they can't deal with any difficulty. So is this growing inability to deal with life, is that going to increase the damage from bullying?
I think we're in a kind of perfect storm, Neil. I think that, and it was said earlier by you guys, that the digital age, we have this almost perfect storm of cyberbullying. So an increase in bullying, certainly through cyberbullying. And then we have, according to standard studies and benchmarks of adulthood, that children today are simply not growing up as they used to. There's a American Sociological Association found that young men and women are much less likely than earlier generations to achieve traditional benchmarks of adulthood by the age of 30. And these benchmarks include leaving home, getting married, having a child, and being financially independent. Kids just aren't growing up like they used to. They probably are more fragile. There's a lot of reasons for it. Certainly one of those reasons would be the fallout of the sexual revolution. I mean, that the sexual revolution of the 60s and 70s largely untethered intercourse from child-making. And in doing so, and I'll tell you, as someone who speaks across this country to thousands of children, our children are being abandoned. When I speak in both public and Christian schools, if I use the word parent, I must follow it with guardian. You would just be shocked how many kids don't live with their parents. How many kids have never met their father, unfortunately. So as we all know, having two parents in the house, it makes it easier in most cases, most of the time, to fill what counselors call the love bucket of our kids. It's not filled. More than that, it's got a lot of holes in it, and we adults can blame ourselves for it.
So, you know, not that we're maybe, blaming, but just I'm interested, is a child growing up in this kind of an environment, doesn't know their father perhaps, are they more susceptible to bullying, or are there studies that show maybe they are more likely to act out in this way?
Well, I think common sense tells us that, you know, these kids, the ideal is two parents. The ideal is having two people standing behind you, lifting you up, talking you off the ledges of life. It's more difficult with one, and Logic 101 states that. There is a psychological fragility to today's kids that just wasn't there as much before. And it's just no accident that the numbers show us that before the sexual revolution, it was better. I mean, kids, when adults falter, kids suffer. And we have really faltered as adults in our culture. The good news, though, is that and you're probably familiar with this, is that the divorce rates are actually slowing down. It's actually getting better in the last the lowest level in 35 years. So there is a silver lining to this. But you want to talk about the snowflakes, they come mostly from parenting.
Talking to Paul Coughlin. Paul is the founder and president of The Protectors. The Protectors is a faith-based answer to the devastating problem of bullying on school campuses. But as you heard Paul say, they do church and ministry presentations, but they also do schools, values-based solutions to bullying. And we're going to talk more about it. Do we just say buck up, buttercup? Is that the appropriate response, or is there a better way? We'll talk about, you know, how do we de-escalate bullying. And let's get into more with cyberbullying. Why is that such a a growing concern. Do kids even have any idea what they're doing when they're involved in this? More with Paul Coffin coming up. You may have a question, maybe experience, maybe it's something that you've been dealing with one of your children or grandchildren. How do you know if your kids are being bullied? Are there some warning signs and things that you can intervene? And what would that look like? We'll talk about it all in the moments ahead. Here's our phone number. You want to join the conversation? It's 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. If you have a comment you would like to share via email, you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link there. And we'll talk more in a moment.
Today.
Our kids today are in environments where safety is sometimes, sadly, increasingly rare. We're talking about bullying today with Paul Coffin, international speaker, teacher, and author. And he is the founder of the Protectors. It's an anti-bullying organization that helps schools and churches throughout North America as well as internationally. And has written several books, including the parent and teacher resource Raising Bully-Proof Kids. Paul, you touched on the difference between hurt and harm. You know, probably back in our generation, you know, mom or dad would just say, well, just buck up, buttercup. Is that not the right response when our kids might go through difficult times at school?
Yeah, you know, the devil's always in the details on these things. So if you have a mild case of bullying where it's not happening too frequently and the intensity isn't all that great, ignoring the bully can be a real viable response, and it can work. They just might go away. Also, befriending the bully can work as well. But we have to keep in mind, particularly as a faith community, the Christian community, I've noticed over the last 10 years, is a real sucker for the kindness message. We believe that that kid who bullies just suffers from low self-esteem. They're being abused at home. That is simply not true for most bullies. Most bullies bully due to self-love, not self-hate. It's hubris and arrogance, not low self-esteem, that usually motivates most kids. So kindness can work, but at the same time, we have to give our kids tools to stand up to bullying without becoming a bully themselves. And one of the best things they can do is it's a verbal comeback. Most bullying, about 80%, particularly in middle school and high school, is going to be verbal. They can't get away with physical bullying anymore, so they move to verbal bullying. And it's usually isolation, humiliation, things like that that they want to do to the target on purpose. The word whatever is a great response because it's dismissive without revenge, without an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But not just saying whatever, it's how they say it. A bully is going to want to take your kid and tie them up rhetorically. They're really good at it. They have greater verbal acumen usually than non-bullies. So it's very important for our kids to stand up for themselves and then walk away with confidence, if at all possible. The number one character trait that will make your child a target of bullying is that they'll be non-assertive. A bully is not looking for a fight. A bully longs to overwhelm other people. And who could they overwhelm? People they're pretty sure will not push back. That's who they're looking for.
With all the effort we put into the self-esteem movement, we've somehow missed the need to have confidence, apparently, right?
Yes, you know, it's interesting that Dr. Roy Baumeister, University of Florida, was originally a believer in the self-esteem movement. He's no longer a believer. And in fact, he, among others, have argued pretty persuasively that it has not delivered at all what we thought it would deliver. You know, we thought that by bolstering the self-esteem of our kids, that they would be better citizens, they would get better grades. That has not happened. We put our eggs in the wrong basket. When it comes to kids who are targets of bullying, they're the ones with the low self-esteem. They're the ones who have difficulty with lasting adult relationships. They're the ones who are passive-aggressive. They are the ones with anger management problems. bullies can handle their anger just fine. Bullies profile. There's a reason why October is the anti-bully month, because bullies go shopping in September, and by October, most of them have found targets. They've tested them out. The kid doesn't push back. Bam, they're on them for much of the school year.
Mm. And that really happens too, doesn't it? I mean, it becomes relentless. So it's not, like I say, just a once or twice a thing. This once someone is targeted, they unless they stand up or break the cycle, it's going to keep on, isn't it?
It is. They need to do something. They need to tell the bully no. It's amazing how powerful no is. It depends on how they say it, too. So we have coaching for kids and parents. Parents really need to coach their kids through this. My middle son, Garrett, was bullied, and we had to walk him through those waters. It took time. We taught him what to say, but also how to say it and the dynamics that are involved. And it worked. It took about 2 years or so to really kind of help him out of that hole. But there is help, and we can do it. But make no mistake, bullies are extremely clever. In many cases, many times, they're often charismatic. And what they will do is they will get seemingly good kids, good Christian kids, to join them over time. And what that target needs sometimes, some of them are incapable of self-rescue. No matter what they say, no matter what they do, there's too many people coming after them. And what they need is a protector. They need someone who will intervene with assertive but nonviolent behavior. And that's what we teach at the protectors, because it's the only proven thing to work when it comes to bullying is bystander intervention.
We'll talk more about it in a moment. By the way, theprotectors.org is the website to go for more information on this important topic, theprotectors.org. Paul Coughlin, guest today. Let's take a phone call. Carol is calling in from Detroit Lakes. Carol, you're on with Paul Coughlin. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for sharing. I have worked off and on in the public schools, and what I have found really works is character counts. And I know several years ago there was a counselor at an elementary school, and that was a program that they introduced, and teaching forgiveness, you know, turning the other cheek, so to speak, and being amongst children, like on the playground, and, oh, teacher, so-and-so did this to me. Well, then going in there and then just, you know, being a mediator between, you know, that in that situation, and then teaching them, okay, was it done intentionally? No. Okay, then apologize, you know. And they're yeah. getting that understanding at a young age, the importance of please forgive me, I'm sorry, you know, and teaching forgiveness.
Carol, thank you
for
that call.
Is, That's great. Character certainly does count. And, again, kindness and forgiveness, we need more of them in our culture. It seems to have gotten kind of worse after this last political season. We're all, like, wounded afterward. And but we also need to keep in mind that when it comes to a serial bully, that they really don't listen much to peace, love, and understanding. They don't. They listen to power and consequences. And if we have the seemingly Christian message when it comes to the theater of bullying, it works and it really doesn't work. We need to show power and strength on behalf of our child. Our child has to stand up to bullying without becoming a bully themselves. It is it takes work. But they can do it, because if they continue to, for example, turn the other cheek. But we need to keep in mind that turn the other cheek is a reference from Jesus to probably mean that we're not supposed to respond with an insult for an insult. Being slapped on the face is not a mortal injury. It's more embarrassing. It's an insult. So our children are not supposed to respond with an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But self-defense is not revenge. And we need to get this to our kids, because we have spoken and worked with hundreds now of students whose parents told them the seemingly Christian answer, and it didn't work. Like, kill them with kindness, for example. Just got done interviewing a lady in Pittsburgh. She's a school teacher now. And I said, did that work? And she said, oh, no, it just made things worse. Her parents would buy lollipops and give them to the entire – she would give them to the class. And she said, you know, they must have gone through, you know, thousands of them trying to get these kids to like her through kindness. And I'm just here to tell you that that doesn't work with serial bullies.
I was thinking about, you know, we want to de-escalate, but appeasement isn't a workable strategy, is it? I mean, Ronald Reagan knew that, peace through strength, right?
Yes, and again, it takes time. You know, we have resources to help parents walk their kid through that. But yeah, peace through strength shows a lot, and actually peace through the strength of bystanders. And this is what really needs to happen. We need to get those bystanders to become alongside standers. And when they do, their lives change. They see they are the ones who become truly empowered when they stand up to a kid who is bullying other kids. You know, when Jesus saw Mary being bullied, probably by Judas, he just didn't pretend like it didn't happen. He actually said, leave her alone. And so no is a spiritual word. The sooner we learn to say it and the sooner we teach our children to do it, the better their life is going to be.
When you talk about bystanders becoming alongside standers, are these like in the school situation? Are these teachers, or are these fellow classmates, or can they be both or anyone?
Yeah, what we focus on primarily is the fellow student. Here's why: the Department of Health and Human Services did a 10-year landmark study looking into anti-bullying programs and found most to be ineffective, even dismal, when it's the adult talking to the kid who bullies. When we're talking about serial bullies here, and when adults are trying to reach them, largely what they're hearing is what Charlie Brown heard, right, in school. Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, they're just waiting for the teacher to stop talking so they can go get the target again, right? But when their peers denounce their behavior, that works. Positive peer pressure. That's what we need to bring into the theater of bullying. Right now, if there were a clear case of bullying, and this would include Christian schools as well, and we're an official ministry partner of Association of Christian Schools International. So right now, if there were a clear case of bullying in our schools across the nation, and 100 of our kids, including our listeners' kids right now, if they saw it take place, statistically, only about 4 would try to help the target. 4. And of those 4, 3 of them are likely to be girls and 1 boy. So that's really good for girls, but what does that say about masculinity? Here's an even sadder statistic. About 40 to 50% of the bystanders will cheer on the bully. They will join the bully in one form or another. That's a miscarriage of justice. Our children are sinning regularly when they witness bullying. They will stand against it, but they need us to help them do that, and that's what we do.
We'll talk more about it in the moments ahead. Also get into the issue of cyberbullying and, you know, some ways that we can become the alongside standard and encourage our kids in this area and to maybe intervene, whatever it takes. We're talking about bullying today with Paul Coughlin, founder and president of The Protectors. Check out their website for great resources, theprotectors.org. Paul's author of a number of books. You can join us in the conversation. If you have a question or comment, it's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
As much as we love and appreciate and need those tidings of comfort and joy, there are many of our students in our communities and our families, perhaps, that are not getting rest because they're being bullied and they're being affected by it in serious ways. We're talking about it today with Paul Coughlin, the founder and president of The Protectors. It's an anti-bullying organization that helps schools and churches throughout North America and around the world. And Paul's also authored a number of books, including No More Christian Nice Guy. And we're talking today about the growing concern about bullying and just taking it on in some powerful and effective ways. Paul, we haven't talked a lot about cyberbullying, but How is that different from physical bullying, and why is it worse?
Well, it's even it can be worse because of the anonymity of it, and of course, it's not a perfect tool for bullies, but it's close. It's really close, and it's sad that our laws haven't been able to catch up in time. Eventually, they will, but oh man, the carnage that has been left on it is just so painful. We hear about it weekly here at the Protectors. The answer to cyberbullying is largely the same answer to face-to-face bullying. One, do not give the bully a public display of pain and anguish. Bullies want a public display of pain and anguish. Why? Because it makes them feel powerful. Why does it make them feel powerful? Because it is power. They want to control other people with words and be good at it. Don't give them the satisfaction. If you have to respond, the word whatever, again, is a really good one to remember, and then to not engage in a further dialogue, if at all possible, with that bullying. Then the other thing, too, though, is, again, bystander intervention. That is what shuts down a bully. I'll give you an example. A girl in Ashland, Oregon, created a Mean Girls Ashland High School anonymous Facebook page, and she was saying horrible things about her classmates. Well, it didn't last that long because their classmates got on there and said, "I can't believe what you're saying about this person. That's not true. What's wrong with you? I'm printing this out. I'm giving it to the teacher. We're going to get the police involved." What happened was the bystanders denounced the behavior in an assertive but nonviolent way. Well, there's no payoff with a bully. A bully wants other people to see their attacks on other people. And why is that? They enjoy it. Your average bully enjoys the pain and suffering of another human being. I just gave you the definition of sadism. So we don't give them the payoff. Bystander intervention, and this is why it's also so important. Studies show that when we see someone in need and it's within our power to act and we don't help that person, our capacity for courage, sympathy, and empathy decrease in the future. That makes us a smaller souled person. But contrast that to when we do help the person. Studies show that our capacity for courage, sympathy, and empathy increase. We become larger souled. We become more righteous. This is actually a portal moment for all of our children to grow, mature, and to show God's love.
And how we want that for our kids. I'm thinking, you know, they're kids. And, you know, we had a lot of studies about brain development. I mean, do kids even comprehend the kind of impact they're having, maybe whether it's cyberbullying or maybe even face-to-face, the kind of bullying behavior, what that really does to someone?
Yeah, you know, when it comes to the bully, they're aware of their behavior, but in many cases, they're not aware of the full extent of what it's doing to the target. No, in many cases, that's true. Now, in some cases, it is, though. If you might remember, Rebecca Sedgwick jumped from a water tower, and as a 12-year-old girl jumped from a water tower in Florida. Her two main abusers right afterward wrote on Facebook, "Mission accomplished." These are 12-year-old girls speaking this way. So not all of them can be reached that way. They probably saw the extent of their behavior, and they're glad they did it. Because, see, bullying doesn't stem from anger. Bullying stems from hatred. Bullying stems from disdain and contempt toward another human being, with as opposed to the language and behavior of superiority. Your average bully believes they're superior to other people. Therefore, other people deserve to be treated horribly.
You mentioned that girls were more frequently become the alongside standers, but I'm wondering, are girls worse than boys when it comes to bullying?
Probably, at least when it comes to emotional aggression. They tend to be better at it than boys. And then studies have shown, too, that once a girl, or even more so now, a group of girls, a queen bee and wannabes is what they're called, that they're more likely to follow the same target longer over a period of time. So they probably are worse in that regard.
What are the outcomes of repeated bullying? I mean, are there maybe short-term and long-term consequences for someone who's on the receiving end?
Yes. The Wesley Society of Australia followed serial targets, and they wanted to find out what kind of adults they became. the statistics are shocking, and it's really important for us Christians to understand, because our children were not put on this earth, Neil, to be the plaything of other people. We are imbued with dignity, value, and worth. And with that comes innate importance. No one has the right to tear that asunder. It's really a battle for human dignity. Well, they found that 7 out of 10 serial targets had difficulty forming lasting adult relationships. Specifically, they're the ones who struggled with anger management problems. They're the ones who had a hard time trusting people, including bosses and spouses. But this is probably the worst thing. They're the ones who struggled with resentment. And resentment is the leading negative emotion tethering people to drug and alcohol abuse. Bullying does not make us stronger. Bullying leads to agoraphobia in women, 25 times more likely to develop agoraphobia later in life. It does lead to depression. It leads to the type of things that crush a person's spirit. And so we need to do more than just tell our kids to just ignore it.
So there's research on serial targets. How about serial bullies? What do they grow up and become?
Yeah, well, I mean, it makes sense. Bullies, they followed them. Serial bullies wanted to find out what kind of adults they became. 5 to 6 times more likely to commit a felony by their early 20s. You see this in those who attacked Phoebe Prince of South Hadley High School. Remember her? She was on the cover of People magazine a number of years ago. She became the face of bullying. Many of the people who bullied her have multiple run-ins with the law, and 4 to 5 times more likely to abuse their future spouse and future children. We're not ministering to these kids. They need to be ministered to, but in a very different way. Right now, our culture is having them write poems and love songs about themselves that they're basically just these wounded little butterflies, and all they need is just feel better about themselves and they'll be a better person. Simply not working. They already have excessive self-esteem. Your average bully needs humility. They need to see the value and the worth in other people, and they need to view other people as equals, that they're not superior to other people.
You mentioned ministering to the kids. Say a word about what maybe church youth groups, Sunday school teachers, just in our church settings, how we can maybe have our eyes open to the possibility of bullying, and maybe are there warning signs for parents as well?
Yes, we have a stack of letters from parents who no longer go to church because their kid was bullied in youth group, and they say that the leader didn't do anything about it. Now, my guess is the leader did try to do something about it, but it was inadequate, to say the least. Most people in church have no formal bullying training. They just don't. And so what do you need to look for? First, you need to stop characterizing what's happening as conflict. This isn't conflict. This isn't two people who just aren't getting along. This is one person who, and probably a group of people, have chosen to deliberately select a person in that youth group and go after them on a regular basis. And the other kids, they may push back every once in a while, but that doesn't mean there's equal problem. They're being dominated. They're being controlled. They're being humiliated. They're being isolated to the enjoyment and pleasure of other people. So we really need to look at it in those terms. Once we break up this it's conflict, then we can really start getting to the real source and possibly the solution. One great way, if you're in church, is to get collaborative testimony from other people who may have seen it. If your child is being bullied, have them hit record on their cell phone. The same technology being used to humiliate our kids, cell phones, can also be the same technology to liberate them, because what will happen in most cases, most of the time, the kid who bullies is going to lie. They're very good at playing adults, and so we need to push them in that lie so we can create justice for that target.
Have youth workers with the body cams, maybe, just like the police need. So it does remind me, you talked about the group. Does bullying often happen in a group, or does it tend to be an isolated individual?
Yeah, when I was growing up, and probably you as well, it was more of a one-on-one affair. In fact, there was a stigma attached to bullying. If multiple people went after one kid, we'd say, hey, that's not fair. You need to stop that. That stigma is not there as much as it used to be, unfortunately. And there are studies that can help us believe that group bullying is on the rise. So, and we see it often. And we see it more than we used to at the Protectors as well, that instead of one bully, it's a group of 3 to 5 against one kid. Now, put yourself in that kid's shoes. What are you going to do? You have 3 to 5 people on a regular basis going at you. Now, it makes for a great movie where that kid's able to stand up to all of them and verbally, you know, beat them back. It makes for a great movie. It doesn't happen in real life. It just doesn't. The kid doesn't have that kind of power. And also, he's been selected. Keep in mind, the bullies in a school, they don't go after the kids who are really good with words and push back. That's not fun. That doesn't work. They can't work their magic there. They go after the kid who they know can't push back.
We kind of just touched on warning signs when thinking for the mom, the dad, the grandpa, grandma. If they think maybe their child, and it could be at a pretty young age too, right? This isn't just 10 and 15 year olds.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, some of the warning signs to look for among at the top of them, and there's a lot of them, and they can be found on our website too, is a kid who used to have some joy and some pleasure of going to school, they just don't want to go anymore, but they're not telling you why. Studies show that most kids do not tell people when they're being bullied, and when they do tell people, at the end of the school year. They will endure an entire school year of this behavior, and then they think that come summer vacation, it's safe to tell someone. It's really sad that that's the case. It's when that kid starts to become passive-aggressive, and he wasn't that way before, where they're starting to attack their siblings and they didn't do it before, outbursts of anger, signs of depression, sleeping too much, sleeping too little, eating too much. For younger kids, it can be a visiting, once again, bedwetting when they used to not do that. And so these are some of the major signs of a kid being bullied. And what's the answer? And I know we've talked about some pretty awful stuff so far, but there is hope. And friendships are absolutely key. Bullies go after isolated prey in most cases most of the time. And when a kid is alone in youth culture, it is really a sign of weakness. And weakness invites aggression in youth culture. Cruelty is currency in youth culture, including church youth culture. I wish that weren't the case, but it is true. And numerous studies show that the kids who bully are often the most popular because for some reason we kind of admire that behavior. So what do? We got to grow those friendships. How do we do that? We want to get 3 to 5 friends, if at all possible, with your kid. And oftentimes kids who get targeted, they can be shy, so it's hard for them to make friendships. We need to coach them through that difficult time. We need to help them have more friendships, shared interests, hobbies. If it's a boy, he's going to probably have to eat into his video game time. There's just no way around it. Video games have a way of building some degree of friendships, but they need to be face-to-face friendships as well.
There's lots of resources, lots of tips, lots of encouragement available on the website, theprotectors.org. And if you want to connect with Paul, you can just write to paul@theprotectors.org. And just know that, the word whatever needs to be your friend, saying no, walking away with confidence, those things and more that we've just kind of touched on. And maybe the final thought there just about the importance of coaching our kids to develop good friends and helping them. And, Paul, this is such an important area, and we just pray God's continued blessing to you as you carry the torch for this. This is really such a critical area, and I thank you for making such a difference.
It is. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to bring this message to your listeners. We're here to help. We have great resources for parents, children, from themselves, and it's done through really good and wise parenting. So we're here to help change that for your child.
It's The Protectors, a faith-based answer to the devastating problem of bullying, and I encourage you to find out more at theprotectors.org. Paul Coughlin joining us today. He's author of a number of books, international speaker and teacher, and encourager today here on Connecting Faith. Coming up in a moment, we'll gonna hear a little bit about Angel Tree and more. Stay tuned to Connecting Faith. Paul Coughlin reminding us to help our kids develop good friends to coach them through how to build friendships and how to come alongside those that are hurting. You know, as moms and dads, we need to be obviously parenting our kids, but also need to engage in their lives, even maybe when they don't want us to do that. Some time ago, I had an opportunity to talk with Elaine Bennett, who's the founder and director of the Best Friends Foundation, the foundation that promotes self-respect through the practice of self-control and provides participants with the skills, guidance, and support to reject bullying, relationship violence, and drug and alcohol abuse. And thought we'd just share a highlight from my conversation with Elaine. She's written a book called Daughters in Danger, Helping Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. Give a listen. What would you say maybe for moms today? How could they change maybe the way they're relating to the daughter to protect them more effectively?
Well, I think the first step is communication. Talk to your daughter. Keep those channels open. Don't think because she's not talking to you that you need to leave her alone. You know, continue to talk to her in as calm a way as you can. I understand that it's often very frustrating when your daughter or your son shuts down and appears to want to shut you out. But often that's when they're the most troubled. And that's when just being there, just having knowing that they're loved. I think a lot of the young people today aren't sure about love. They're not sure if their parents really love them. And particularly when they leave their home and they go out into that big cold world on that college campus and they're trying to study and they want to get good grades and they don't want to flunk out. And then they've got the stress of the social life and they're scared. They're frightened. And instead of worrying about being a helicopter mom or dad, I think you need to make sure, take those trips on campus, drop in, you know, every couple of weeks or so, and keep those phone calls going, not just text or emails, but connect with them, let them hear your voice. You know, being a cool mom was seen as kind of a neat thing to be, but I'd rather see warm mothers. I'd rather see a mom who inspires her daughter intellectually and but also encourages her to have compassion for others. I think we've missed some of the altruism of mother-daughter relationships. Girls can be very competitive as adolescents when they're 12, 13, 14. And if mothers play into that, in that competitive, who's got the coolest clothes and the coolest hair and the who's on the right team and so on and so forth, then what happens to this very important character trait of compassion, of caring about the girl who's left out, instead of just always wanting to be part of the cool group?
That's Elaine Bennett, who's founder and director of Best Friends Foundation. She's written a wonderful book called Daughters in Danger, Helping Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. I recommend that to you, and you can listen to the full interview on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. We're talking about daughters in danger, daughters impacted by a ministry like Angel Tree. We've got a great story today that we're going to share with you next. And as you listen, think about ways that you can be involved in changing a life during Christmas through Angel Tree. Here's Christina's story.
Christina doesn't remember a time when her father wasn't in prison.
My name is Christina Allen. I'm 24 years old. My father was incarcerated when I was 3 years old for murder, burglary, and arson. And he's not scheduled to get out of prison until 2038.
But Christina did have someone she could count on. A mother who kept the family together and even organized anxious trips to the prison for a little girl to see her daddy.
the times going in to the prison, my focus was more so on going to visit daddy, more so than the strip search and everything else that encompasses those visits, because it's daddy, and no matter what, little girls love their fathers.
Daddy was someone Christina visited twice a year. Mommy was the consistent presence in her life, until just after Christina's 12th birthday.
I didn't realize how big of an impact my father's incarceration played until I was 12 years old and my mom passed away.
Now alone, Christina's thoughts turned to her father in prison.
Because I didn't have him there, I began to build up a lot of hatred in my heart towards him.
As a young teenager, Christina was looking for something, anything she could count on. That first Christmas after her mother died, there was a knock on the door, and she realized there was something that had been consistent for just about all her life. Angel Tree. Prison fellowship had not missed a single year.
It made me feel special inside. Every year, he would send me a gift through Angel Tree, and it's something I grew to expect every Christmas.
Because she had not been forgotten by Angel Tree, Christina realized she had not been forgotten by God.
I realized that God had never turned his back on me. He was always there to keep me safe from harm. I had to give him back the only thing that I had that was worthy, and that was my life.
What has God done with that surrendered life? Christina earned an MBA by age 22. With her husband, she launched an Angel Tree outreach at their university and their home church. But part of her will always be an Angel Tree kid. She still cherishes her favorite Angel Tree gift, a jewelry box from her dad.
I began to hold items that were near and dear to my heart inside of it. I kept the ID card that I took with me when I visited my dad. I also kept jewelry that my mom gave me before she passed away. To me, it was always a box that I could go to for small but great memories of my mom and my dad. Although they were gone, they still lived in my heart.
For hurting children across America, Angel Tree gifts confirm they are not forgotten. This Christmas, would you help a boy or girl like Christina know there is hope and a future?
Now, prisoners' children are among the most severely at-risk children and youth in America. Angel Tree is an important way to reach out to kids struggling with the anger, the hurt, and the disappointment they feel over their parents' incarceration. Your gift, $99, will help reach six children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love from their incarcerated parent. You can make that gift online today at angeltree.org, or you can find a link on our website at myfaithradio.com. Thank you for listening to Connecting Faith today. To kind of wrap up our conversation, a good word from Steve Douglas.
Raising kids in this day and age can seem impossible. But with the right perspective and with faith in God, all things are possible. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and Crawford Loritz joins us today on Making Your Life Count.
You can actually give them the help that hurts them by overprotecting them. What we need to do is speak into our kids in such a way that they have a vision of God's great ability. And so what we need to focus on is raising our kids with an understanding that God is able to defy any set of circumstances, challenges, or temptations in which they find themselves, so that they end up being people who can impact the culture rather than running and hiding from it.
You too can trust God with your kids to make a positive difference in today's culture. Do you want to learn more? Go to makingyourlifecount.com.
All right, so if you missed part of today's program, you can catch it online. We post our interviews on the show page at myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith, and you can listen again and pass it on to a friend. Tomorrow on the program, you won't want to listen. Tomorrow, the day that we'll live in infamy, we are going to hear from a over 100-year-old veteran, and he was one of the few survivors of the attack in Pearl Harbor, and will tell us his story. Jim Downing is guest tomorrow on Connecting Faith. It'll be an amazing conversation with a 103-year-old Navy veteran, and you'll hear his story on Connecting Faith here on Faith Radio.